My gosh. Okay then. Recording in progress. Raul, were you raising your hand to be recognized as a day counter? I saw you waving at the. Can we recognize Raul before we go any further? Everybody counts. I don't know who's the.
In the right place.
Okay. All right. We'll start over again. Hi, everybody. I'm Jackie. I'm an alcoholic. And sorry, it's not Hillary that you might have been expecting. She had something come up, and I'm her backup speaker, not her backup singer, but her backup speaker. And what a meeting! Holy crap, you guys. I feel like I've had a Jolt Cola and a Snickers. This is fantastic. And I am going to be letting my people know about this meeting as a great place to hang out and recognize newcomers. Oh my gosh, welcome our Raul and our 1 days and 2 days and 68 days and today. Oh my God, it just life's a little lifey recently, and I've been in a little of a funk. Not a pity party, but a funk. And after all this energy and love and support and just the magic of being sober, goodness, should bottle and sell that. No, don't bottle it. Put it in a chocolate bar. That would be better. So, okay, I'm better now. I see a couple of familiar faces. Most of you, I don't know who you are, but I know who you are because we're alcoholics. We did a lot of the same stuff. The fine details are a little different, but the good news is that we're all here today and we're sober and we're doing the deal. 20 minutes is just, it's a blip on the radar of my sobriety. So I'm going to try and, get as much into it as I can. Been sober since August 22nd, 1994. Do not get excited. That is not my first sobriety date. There were many, many, many sobriety dates. I was being told I was an alcoholic. And if you tell an alcoholic to do something, they're going to do the other thing. So when I was being told by my loving husband and family that I was an alcoholic and I needed to go to AA, just gave me an excuse to drink. And things got really bad. Did you know that? That if you keep drinking, that your life falls apart and you lose things like children and respect and self-respect. And I ended up at a what I like to call my glorious bottom, because being told I was an alcoholic, I was doing the stuff, going to meetings, going to detox, doing the Jenny, hi, sorry, doing, the sobriety things, but I wasn't doing it for me. I was people pleasing. I was trying to get the heat off. And it wasn't until I hit what I call my glorious bottom and I decided I was an alcoholic and I decided I needed help. And it was a completely different vibe going to an AA meeting of my own choice. I had an Eskimo who was a friend of my husband's who took me to my first AA meeting that I chose to go to. And I was a little bit of a mess. And I looked at my Eskimo and I said, well, I don't know if I can stand up as a newcomer, but I don't want to disappoint you. And he laughed. He thought that was funny. And he said, well, you won't disappoint me. Now, had I been drinking, I would have drank at him. But I didn't get it then, but I get it now. And I did stand up as a newcomer. And I cried and I blubbered. And it is okay to cry when you're new or if you're not so new. And so I began my journey into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did one meeting a week. I did not share. I did not read. I did not talk to people. I did not give out my phone number. I did not ask for phone numbers. I sat in the back of the room and I was one of these. I was in the room, but I was so scared that you were going to know who I was, what type of person I was, because I thought I was the worst alcoholic to walk the face of the planet. I was petrified that you would learn my secrets. And I found that as I started, the fog started to clear a little bit, and I started listening at some of the stories when people were sharing. And I thought, wait a minute, I did that. Oh my gosh, that was me. And it started to trickle in that I was not the worst. That, yeah, there were people who had done a lot more creative things than I have. And there were some people who hadn't gotten to my level of creativity. So slowly but surely, I was able to stop looking for the differences and shockingly see the similarities. I got to 1 year sober, and this crazy woman named Mary asked me to be her sponsor. I'm in deep doo-doo. I have not taken a step. I don't have a sponsor. I got nothing. And so I went to my Eskimo and I said, what do I do? And he said, maybe it's time to get that sponsor. So I got a sponsor. I chose a woman to help me take the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know those sponsors, they are so pesky. She suggested I go to more than one meeting a week. Oh my gosh. So I took her suggestion. I started going to numerous meetings a week. I started to, what's that S word? Share. Where's that C word? Commitments. I dived into sobriety. And I wish there was a word in the English language to tell you how much my life changed being in the middle of the program. I thought that just stopping the drinking, everything would be fine. Everything would be sunshine and banana splits. Unfortunately, the drinking is only a symptom, and there is a whole lot of stuff going on that I needed to take a look at. And I was able to take a look at it by taking the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And oh my gosh, I've taken the steps several different times. And my first time, I thought everything had to be perfect because alcoholics want to be perfect. You want to be line leader. You want to finish the test first. You want to do everything perfect. And I have learned for me, perfection is an illusion. And through taking those 12 steps of AA, I learned that when I tried to be perfect and I didn't make it, I drank. So, why would I want to try to be perfect in sobriety? Because I'm setting myself up for a drink. So, I stopped trying to be perfect. I try to do the best I can. Now, best is pretty good. That's got some potential. But the perfection, that was too much. And I'm not perfect, never will be, never can be. It's just that ain't gonna happen. And so by doing my best, I can do that. And that's what I do every day to the best of my ability. When I wake up in the morning, I don't come to, is that the best? Is that, it doesn't get old for me to wake up. And first thing I do is I pray. And I am not a knee prayer. God forgive me, He has. I pray in bed where I'm nice and warm and I'm safe. And I pray and I ask for help to stay sober today. say the third and seventh step prayer. I pray for others. I ask for guidance. And the reason I pray in bed is because I don't want to put my foot on the floor because I know the boogeyman is under my bed and he's going to grab my ankle and, boogeyman central. So for me, I need to pray before I get out of bed and start my day. I go to about nine meetings a week. Because I can. I'm not trying to make up for that one meeting a week my first year, but I am participating in my sobriety. I get to sponsor other women. I'm also in the program of Al-Anon. So I've got a lot going on to help me stay sober one day at a time, but I'm going to focus on AA because this is the singleness of purpose. And because our disease is a killer. I have two brothers and a sister. My birth parents drank. My birth parents would have babies and they would give us to our grandparents. One brother was 2 months old, one was 2 months old. My sister was 3 days old. I was 6 weeks old. Have a baby, grandparents. And in between the four siblings, they had miscarriages. My birth parents knew how to get pregnant. They didn't know how to take care of their children. And it wasn't until I started taking the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous that I realized that my birth parents were alcoholics as well. And I realized that they did the best they could for myself and my brother and my brothers and my sister. Because a lot worse could have happened to this little 6 weeks old baby who had orange hair as an infant, orange, field safety orange. They could have sold me. They could have dumped me in a ditch. They could have, who knows? But they gave me to our loving grandparents. And my grandparents were the only parents I knew. My grandmother taught me how to pray. When I was 11, my grandmother passed away. And oh my God, there was such, that was my mother dying. And my older sister, she was 5 years older. My older sister announced that there is no God because a loving God would not take our grandmother from us. Okay. Whatever my big sister said, I believed. And, we ended up living with our birth parents, and our birth dad chose to molest my sister and me. And we went to tell my mom, and our mom told us that it was their philosophy that my sister and I should learn about sex from our dad rather in the back seat of a car. That didn't work for me or for us. When my grandmother died, we had been sent to Minnesota to live with our birth parents. Being good alcoholics, they literally lost the farm and we ended up moving back to Southern California. My sister went to her high school and told them what happened. And so we got taken away from our birth parents to live with our grandfather. And when I was 16, he died. And I ended up living with birth parents again. And old daddy, he went, "Oh boy, she's back. I'm going to pick up where I left off or not." And I moved out when I was 17. And I drank at my parents, I drank at them. And I wore that abandonment issue. Oh, it was like a banner. What a great excuse to drink. And like I said, in taking the steps, I learned that it was a gift that they gave me to our grandparents, and that my grandparents were loving, caring people. And they, oh my God, I can't wait to go to heaven and see them again. My brothers and my sister were both alcoholics as well. And when I was 10 years sober, we had a family event, and my beautiful sister showed up, and she was older than me. I think I said that. My sister showed up and with her family, And the whites of my sister's eyes were yellow. They were not yellow, they were chartreuse. They were, I'm trying to find somebody who's got a yellow shirt on. You're just gonna have to trust me that they were yellow. And she had a drink in hand, of course. And I tried to get her to go to the hospital. Family wouldn't take her, nothing. Nobody would listen. And so my sister ended up in the hospital, and there were 7 quarts of fluid removed from her body. Her organs were shutting down, was what was going on. And while she was in the hospital, we rounded up our two brothers. So it was my two brothers, my sister, and me, and we figured out it had been 43 years since the four of us had been together in the same room. And my sister did not make it. My sister died on her 53rd birthday from alcoholism. She had cirrhosis, she had pancreatitis, and she had hepatitis. And I don't know about you, but when I was drinking, my disease said, "Don't worry, you're not hurting anybody else. You're only hurting yourself." And I'm here to tell you that when my sister died, I felt a pain like I had never felt in my life. And it's been almost 22 years that she's been gone. And I think about her every day. Where'd she go? She was 53. She didn't live to see her daughters get married or her six grandchildren. There's my sis. There's my sister Jill. That's from her funeral. People used to mistake us for each other. They thought we were twins. And she thought she wasn't hurting anybody when she drank. When I turned 53, on my 53rd birthday, I thought throughout the day the choices that my sister made, that she chose to drink. She'd been in the hospital. She almost died. When they released her from the hospital, she went home, and she was a good alcoholic. She had alcohol hidden in the house. Of course. So she drank again. And one of the nurses came out to me and she said, "There's nothing we can do for her." That was not okay because that was my sister. And I loved her more than anything. And we had survived so much. But there was nothing they could do for her. And so I'm going to ask y'all a favor. I'm going to give you some homework. And what I'm going to ask is that if you have a family member that you haven't spoken to in some time because you threw up on their couch, or you stole their car, or you burned down their house, or you owe them money, any of those reasons, I would so appreciate it if you would call that family member up. And please don't text. Texting did not exist when I got sober. Please call that family member and just say, I want to say I love you. And that's all. Don't worry about making amends or paying them back. Just let them hear your voice and say, I love you. Because I can't do that with Jill. I still think about calling her. I still say, oh, look, talk to my sister. And I can't because she chose gin over me. I mean, I'm pretty cool, but she didn't choose. She had no choice. She was powerless. She was powerless, and she had a very enabling and codependent husband. He would buy her handles of gin by the case. And I said, "Holy Mother of God, why are you buying her alcohol?" And he said, "Well, I don't want her to sneak around." Well, she didn't have to. The alcohol was there for her, and she was powerless over alcohol, and her life was unmanageable. And she died an alcoholic death. If you have seen someone die an alcoholic death, you know what it's like.
2 minutes.
And thank you. And it's horrific. I don't want to drink today. I don't want to cause myself pain or others around me pain. I have 3 grown sons. I have 8 grandchildren. I have 6 grand boogers and 2 grand princesses. My oldest grand booger will be 22 this month, and he's in sober living. He almost died, overdosed on fentanyl 4 times. At the sober living where he is, he smokes pot, but he's not drinking. I don't get that, but it's not my business. He knows where to come if he has questions. I am powerless over someone else's alcohol. I was powerless over my sister Jill's alcoholism. I'm powerless over my own, but I have tools. I have tools to use. I have a sponsor. She has a sponsor. I have sponsees. I have a posse. I have a posse of women, so that I've been in kind of a lifey thing the last week. I've got my inner circle posse of women who I have been talking to and supporting me, as well as my sponsors. I have an AA sponsor and an Al-Anon sponsor. I have a great therapist. I am surrounded by women who love me unconditionally, and I in turn love them unconditionally because we do this thing together. A friend came to my house yesterday, and she's been in and out for a year and a half. And so yesterday she said, "I'm not doing anything. I'm not going to meetings. I'm not doing anything. I'm just putting alcohol over there." And she said, "That's probably wrong." And I said, "There's nothing I could say. You know, I tried all sorts of stuff until I ran out of ideas. The best idea that I've ever seen in my life is right here with all of you, with Alcoholics Anonymous, with, oops, this handy dandy little book." And my book is taped together. It is highlighted. It has notes. It's got crap in it. And it's my lifeline. I hope I've said something that touched your heart. I hope you're going to take something away today. I hope you'll know how important every single one of you are. And as for the newcomers, you know, we were all newcomers once. Holy crap, thank God they don't take pictures when you walk into your first meeting, because it would not be pretty. I'm going to put my phone in the chat when it's open. Call me. Oh my God, call me. I had someone tell me last week, "Oh, I thought of calling you all last week, but I didn't." Well, I needed calls last week. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not some high exalted grand poobah. I'm an alcoholic. I need to talk to other alcoholics. I need to be of service. I need to put myself out there when I'm in pain. And so I'm going to put my number in the chat. If you need to talk, talk. I'm on WhatsApp. You know, we're worldwide. You can't escape me. So, with that, I want to thank you so much for letting me share. I love you guys. This meeting is one of the best meetings I have ever been to. And I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you for letting me share.